Good morning once again.
Morning.
This seems to be a habit, or getting to be a habit anyway. Well, this morning I don't want to take too much time because it is the last great day, and I don't want to take anything away from, or time away from Fred's message, so I'll try to make this somewhat short and sweet. But before we actually start commenting on what Fred mentioned earlier about the Jubilee year and the first year of Christ's ministry, I just commented to him that in doing my own study and reading Edersheim's The Life and Times of Jesus Messiah, the chronology shows that the first year of Jesus' ministry would either be the sabbatical year, that is the seventh year of the final 49th year cycle, or the beginning of the Jubilee year. And that is why, if you read in the gospel, vast crowds were following him, because they weren't working. They weren't plying their trade in towns. They weren't working the fields. They had time on their hands. So it was most interesting. So it's either the Jubilee year or it's the year just before. I haven't fully nailed that down yet, but probably it was the Jubilee year. But if you ever, I always noticed, I always wondered, why is it so many people could follow him? Where did these people come from? Why weren't they working? Well, if it's the sabbatical year or the Jubilee year, we know why they weren't working. There were no jobs then. God said, relax, the land will grow of itself, and you'll have twice in that sixth year to carry you over two more years. So that I thought was interesting.
Michael, one other alternative. They got a written excuse from the rabbis.
Yes, Fred just said they probably got a written excuse from the rabbis. Very good. Very good. Well, this morning we're going to be looking at the Ten Commandments, not from the point of view of how to keep them. We're not going into great depth, but I want to try to give you an overflow or an overview of how they're structured. And they are structured in a way that you don't think about it when you look at them. It's very, very different. To start with, for me, I like movies. And one of the best biblical movies I ever saw, of course, was Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments. Now, what you may not know about that movie, two things which I thought were humorous. First of all, he wanted to get it straight. He wanted to get it accurate as he could. And, you know, these directors and producers are not exactly religious people. They're very secular. So he brought in the complement of the rabbis, the priests, and the ministers to see how he should have the movie set up, what the scene should be like, what the costumes should be, what the dialogue should be, the plots. And he's throwing up his hands because he couldn't get one of them to agree with the other. So finally he said, gentlemen, thank you, but no thanks. And according to the story I read, he said, I've got to get this right. So if all else fails, follow directions, right? So he got out the book of Exodus and he read the first 20 chapters. And he based the movie on what he understood those first 20 chapters to be. Furthermore, you may recall in those days, seeing in schools and libraries replicas or plaques of the Ten Commandments everywhere. Now, what you may not realize, or what I didn't realize, is that was a promotion by Cecil B. DeMille. He had them made by the hundreds or thousands and sent them all over the country as a promotion for his movie. So, interesting. And it worked. It was a very, very good movie. Anyway, we're now going to look at the Ten Commandments. But before we go to Exodus 20, we're going to look at three scriptures where the term Ten Commandments is used. And the most important that we're really going to zero in on is Deuteronomy 4 and verses 12 to 13. We're also going to briefly look at two others. But in Deuteronomy 4, which is page 296, we pick it up in verse 13, actually verse 12. And the Lord spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of the words, but saw no likeness, only a voice. And he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even the Ten Commandments, and he wrote them on two tablets of stone. Now, do keep your place there, because we're going to look at that verse a little more closely. But now turn over just a few pages to Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 4. And here again we have, and he wrote the tablets according to the first writing. Now, of course, if you will recall, Moses went up once. When he came down from the mountain, his temper got the better of him because he saw what was going on with the golden calf. He smashed them. So this refers to the second time. And he wrote on the tablets, according to the first writing, the Ten Commandments, which the Lord spoke to you in the mountain, out of the midst of the fire, in the day of the assembly. Just note that that's there. Then the third scripture is going to be Exodus 34, 28. Exodus 34, 28, just to show you where the term the Ten Commandments is used. Page 208. And he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water, and he wrote upon the tablets the words, the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Okay, so here we have the Ten Commandments. But now let's look more closely in Deuteronomy 4, verse 13. It says, he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even the Ten Commandments, and he wrote them on two tablets of stone. So, in this verse, we have a little two-letter word, two-letter Hebrew word, which is et. It's pronounced et. You know, like E.T.? No, not extraterrestrial. But it's pronounced like that. E.T., no, et. But in reality, it is the first and last letter of the Hebrew language. Aleph, Tav. And it has two significant meanings. The first is the direct object. Think of the first verse in the Bible. Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. In the beginning created God et the heavens, et the earth. That's the sign of the direct object, and it's always there. But secondly, it's saying the A to Z, or in Greek, the Alpha and the Omega, the totality of it all. So God is saying he created the totality of the heavens and the totality of the earth. Well, back in Deuteronomy 4, and in verse 13, it says he declared to you et, his covenant, the totality of the covenant. God held nothing back from Israel. That's the first thing. Then we go next where it says, which he commanded you to perform. Now, this is not a bad translation, but this is the word from the Hebrew asa, which is to make, to do, to celebrate, to observe. And it's found several different places. We may just look, for example, in Genesis 1:16. You don't need to turn there. And he made the stars, you know, he made the sun, he made the moon. Also, my favorite, Exodus 6:19. You can just write it down. We don't need to turn there. When it says the children of the captivity kept the Passover. They did, they performed, they observed. All that meaning. So we learn that he commanded you to perform the Ten Commandments. But here's the interesting thing. Command and commandments, they are not the same words. They're not the same even root letters of the words. It's a little different. The word command is correct. That is command. God did command tzva or mitzvah. When a Jew says he's going to do a commandment, it's mitzvah or plural mitzvot. But the Ten Commandments, that's not mitzvot. That is devarim, or the word devar. And if you look at many margins of the King James, in the Oxford or the American Standard Version, the Revised Standard Version, you'll see in the margins, either center or on the side, the words L-I-T stand for literally and then words, because that's what it means. It means words, sayings, declarations, proclamations, but it's not commands, because the first commandment, for example, is not a command. These are declarations from God. Now, no, I don't mean they're the 10 suggestions. I don't mean God is saying, hey, boys and girls, look, I've got some good ideas here for you. I've got 10 of them. I mean, if you think you have the time and you care to look at them, you just might find that they're helpful. No, 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 nothing like that. But the word is devar, and I want to show you two or three times where that word is used. First, remember Exodus 20? God spoke all these words, devarim. It's the same word in the plural. But I want to specifically have you go to Genesis. Genesis 37 and verse 11. You will recall this is the chapter where Joseph has his dreams. And being a naive 17-year-old, he's telling everybody about his dreams. He's excited about them. Well, I guess I would be too. All right. Well, we'll pick it up in verse 9. And he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers. And he said, behold, I have dreamed another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bow down to me. And he told it to his father and to his brothers. Now, his father, Jacob, knew what this meant. There was no question what it meant. But his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the earth before you? And his brothers were jealous of him. But his father was mindful of the saying, of the devar, the word. This is not a command. It means words. How many times have you read, and behold, the word of the Lord came? That's the same word. So the reason these are declarations from God, they include commands, but they're declarations from him. Now we're going to move over to Exodus 20. And we'll take our time, a little bit of time anyway, pointing out these 10 commandments. But first, why two tablets instead of one? Wouldn't it be easier to have one? I mean, couldn't God have written a little smaller? Didn't he have the ability to do so? Well, of course he did. Well, couldn't Moses have written a little smaller? I mean, the second time God says, look, Moses, I'll speak, you write. Okay, the second time Moses wrote them. So, yeah, he could have. But this is the division, okay? This is the structure. You have five on one, five on the second, because the first five are vertical in application. The second five are horizontal. Well, what does that mean? From God to man, or from adult to child, the relationship is up to down. In the second five, the relationship is not from up to down, but horizontal, person to person. And that is why. And the power of the second five rests on the authority of the first five. So we're going to see parallels. 1 to 6, 2 to 7, 3 to 8, 4 to 9, and 5 to 10. And there is a significance in this. So let's go take a look. Oh, before I start, the fifth one, honor your father and your mother. Okay, dad and mom, true, not God. But think a minute, God's creator. Well, didn't dad and mom create baby? I remember, I like movies, and I still remember a little line from Dr. Zhivago toward the end of the movie where the general is trying to find Dr. Zhivago, his brothers, or his brothers, the one who was his wife and kid, and finds the girl at the big dam, and she's explaining about father and mother, and she says, she was big, I was small. You know, so big, small, okay? So that's why honor your father and mother is on the first side, the first tablet. So let's take a look. Declaration, verse 2, chapter 20. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. This is saying, I am the God of life. I am the Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. I am the creator God. Talk about power. Talk about a declaration. It says, I am the God of life. you are not allowed to kill anybody or execute anybody except I give you authority. So first we have, I am the God of life, I am the God of all power. Then we have the sixth commandment, thou shalt not murder. Doesn't say don't kill. It doesn't say do not execute. It says thou shalt do no murder. You don't kill somebody for no reason. There better be a good reason for it. We know early on in Genesis 9, around verse 6, God says, if man shed man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. God is giving the authority to rulers on earth to execute criminals. Now let's take a couple of good examples of this. And we're going to go to 1 Kings. Talk about execution here. 1 Kings, and we're going to come here. That's going to be around page 442, 443, and we're going to go in this particular case. This tells you about Adonijah, who jumped the gun to try to be king, and then Zadok the priest, of course, and Bathsheba got together and reminded David that Solomon was supposed to be king, and that is certainly true. And now we find in verse 49. And this is the meal, the celebration by Adonijah. And all those who were invited by Adonijah trembled and arose and left, each to go his own way. Adonijah was afraid because of Solomon and arose and went and caught the horns of the altar. You got to realize what that meant, to grab the horns of the altar. This was considered sanctuary. If you could picture it, you're underneath the altar hanging on to the horns, in which case the blood would normally be on those horns. And this is kind of a physical salvation. Now, the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages picked up on this greatly, and you had the church as sanctuary. So if the sheriff was coming after you, you know, the infamous sheriff of Nottingham, wherever it is, in days of Robin Hood, but if the authorities were after you, but you could make it into that church, unless you were a convicted murderer or something like that, they had to stop. They couldn't invade the church. Well, this is the same thing. This is the origin of that. And so it was told to Solomon, saying, behold, Adonijah fears King Solomon, for lo, he has caught hold of the horns of the altar, saying, let King Solomon swear to me today that he will not kill his servant with the sword. And Solomon said, if he proves himself to be a son of virtue, not a hair of his head shall fall to the earth. But if wickedness shall be found in him, then he shall die. What was Solomon to do? Solomon understood that. So he said, okay, be a good citizen, go to your home, don't mess with me, okay? Well, that's not the end of the story, but at least for our purpose today, it shows you that Solomon recognized this. He did not execute Adonijah. However, he did execute someone. Now we're going to turn to 1 Kings, the second chapter, just a page or two over, and verse 29, or 28. And this is the same incident, the same feast. And the report came to Joab, for Joab had turned after Adonijah, though he had not turned after Absalom. And Joab fled to the tabernacle of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. And it was told King Solomon that Joab had fled to the tabernacle of the Lord. And behold, he was by the altar. And Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and said, go fall upon him. In other words, kill him. Why? Joab was a murderer. You can read the rest of the story. What he did to Amasa, what he did to Abner by deceit and trickery. And God had declared, no murderer should seek sanctuary at my tabernacle. But this was according to God's authority. So unless you have authority from God, thou shalt not murder, because God is the God of life. So there is a connection between the first commandment and the second commandment, the first being a declaration. Now let's go back to Exodus 20 and pick up the second commandment. And here, that one is the one that says, you shall have no other gods before me. Don't make for yourselves any graven image or of any likeness that's in heaven above and the earth beneath. verses 3, 4, 5, don't bow down to them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. Okay, this is an exclusive relationship. Well, what does 7? 1 to 6, 2 to 7. Thou shalt not commit adultery. You see, an exclusive relationship. The first one was exclusively God to man, back. The second is horizontally, but it's exclusive. Man to his wife, and back. And it was further elevated by Paul, who said with jealousy, I have espoused you to one husband. The marriage supper between the Lamb and the church. Okay? But as you see, it's an exclusive relationship. And we can wax eloquent on exclusive relationships. But I don't want to take that much time this morning to try that. So that is the second set. Now we're going to go to 3, where it says, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. So, in other words, don't take from God his name. Don't take and use it in profanity. Don't use it lightly. You are stealing from him. You're taking from him his prized possession. And there are many scriptures that talk about his name, how important God's name is. So here God is saying, don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Likewise, number 8, thou shalt not steal. So you're not to take God's name away from him and use it for your own purposes. Likewise, don't take the possessions of others away from them and use it for your own purposes. As we go through the last two, you will find that there's nothing about love here. There's nothing about financing. There's nothing about any other aspects of government. You see, these are, in concept, the basics for a society, a civilization, an entity, a group. If these 5 principles, with 2 applications each, are properly followed, you'll have a law-abiding, peaceful, prosperous society. Now, the others are important. Clean and unclean meats should be important. Absolutely, they should be important. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind. Absolutely, it's very important. And all the other things that God says. But this is the blueprint for a well-regulated society. You'll find that. Now, we've got to go back to the Sabbath. Number 4. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. 6 days work and labor and do all of your stuff, your things. All right? Then we come to 4 and then to 9. Thou shalt not bear false witness. After World War I, there was a concerted effort led by the Soviets, who else, to establish a 5-day week. It didn't work. Why 7? That's ridiculous. 30, okay, I understand 29 or 30 days, you know, the moon going around the sun, that's logical. 360 or 365 days, well, yeah, that's logical, the earth revolving around the sun. Okay, there are certain logic to these numbers. But 7? Where does that fit in? Well, it doesn't, except God declared it so in Genesis 2. That we know. Well, the Soviets, being atheists, wanted no God. And they understood something. It's amazing what they understood. They understood that if you could do away with the 7-day week, you could do away with the moral authority of God. There would be no God. Because when you keep the Sabbath, you're bearing testimony that this is the day of creation. You're acknowledging God as creator. Even if you misuse it on a Sunday, which, of course, the Catholic and Protestant world has done, you do acknowledge God as the author of creation. When you keep any other day, or don't even keep a 7-day week, you are bearing false witness. You are denying the God of creation. It's a little tenuous, but the thread is there, and this is the concept of it. Now we come to the 5th. Honor your father and your mother, and don't covet. Now, honoring your father and your mother doesn't necessarily mean doing everything dad and mom always say, depending upon how old you are. Some fathers and mothers really don't deserve to be honored very much. I understand that. But in basic, you're never to forget the fact that mom and dad are mom and dad, no matter how much they may not deserve to be mom and dad. The coveting comes from the fact that you will find, and this is true, how many times in courts, and this goes throughout history, do you find kids, older kids, going to court trying to get dad, trying to get mom's possession, mom's incapable, dad's incapable, I just can't wait for them to die so we could get their possessions, whatever it is. And so therefore, you cannot honor your father and your mother if you covet their possessions, if you covet what they have. And this word covet does not simply mean desire. This goes beyond that. This goes to the type of crazed obsession. You know the saying, a man is so jealous of his wife, well, she's going to go with somebody else. If I can't have her, no one will have her. And he kills her. This type of thing. That's the meaning of this word covet. It's an obsession that says, if I can't have this house, I'll blow it up. I'll destroy it. That's the concept of thou shalt not covet. And this is basically the structure of the Ten Commandments as God gave them. We can go into all kinds of illustrations of how they are to be obeyed. That's not my purpose this morning. So here you have the declaration, God's ten declarations, his five dealing with God to man from authority above below, and five from person to person, from human to human. Without those declarations, go through history and you will find no civilization, no country, no state, be it a city state or a big state, survived. You must have this as the foundation for survival. And that is basically what I wanted to bring concerning the Ten Commandments. Do your own study on them. And you will find many, many applications. I'm sure you will. But this is the fundamental aspect of them.
For our overseas offices, please check our website, www.cbcg.org.